right, all you good, wonderful citizens of Crypt Nation, I hope you are having a fantastic morning, noon, or night, wherever you guys are in the world. You are certainly in the right place. You are joining us for another action-packed episode of the Crypto 101 podcast. I'm Bryce, as always, joined by my good buddy, Mr. Brendan Veman. How are you doing, Brendan?
Bryce, I am doing fantastic. In the crypto markets, I'm sure by the time that this releases, they will have seen that we're having a little bit of a pullback. And I, for one, have been desperately waiting, wanting to buy the dip in this amazing bull market that we've had so far. And we're finally getting it. But man, we got a lot of awesome stuff to talk about in today's episode. And I'm excited to kick this thing off.
Yeah, I'm excited to kick things off too, because, you know, rain or shine, up market or down market, volatility or flat, there's folks like Nick Dodson who are builders, okay? And Nick is from Fuel Labs. He's the CEO and co-founder. We're going to welcome him on here in just a bit. But this is what the market is all about. It's about finding the folks who aren't just, you know, trading these assets and all that kind of stuff, but they're actually building the future of finance. They're building the protocols that all the exciting things are, you know, trading on, the different applications, the utility, the usage, not just the speculation, not just the meme coins and all that crazy stuff, but the builders. So Nick, thank you for your service. Thank you for being such a strong builder in the space. And we're excited to talk to you today about what you guys got going on at Fuel Labs. How are you doing?
Doing great. Thanks. Thanks for having me. Yeah.
Absolutely. So before we dive in and talk about Fuel Labs and all the exciting things that you guys are building over there, let's just get acquainted here with the audience. Tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you come to decide that of all the things you could be building and spending your time on, you were going to dive into blockchain and you were going to build Fuel Labs?
Have you ever wanted to trade Bitcoin but haven't dared tried? With Plus 500 Futures, you can trade crypto without the hassle of opening a wallet. With just a few clicks, you can register and start practicing with their free and unlimited demo. See a trading opportunity? You'll be able to trade in just two clicks. Feel ready? You can move to real money with as little as $100 once your account is approved. And the great thing is that in addition to crypto, Plus 500 gives you access to a wide range of instruments like the S&P 500, NASDAQ, gas, and much more. Explore equity indices like energy, metals, Forex, and beyond. With a simple and intuitive platform, you can trade anytime, anywhere. Experience the fast, accessible futures trading you've been waiting for with Plus 500. With over 20 years of experience, Plus 500 is your gateway to the markets. Visit us.plus500.com to learn more. Trading in futures involves risk of loss and is not suitable for everyone. Not all applicants will qualify, and this is not personal financial advice. Plus 500, it's trading with a plus.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, the journey started a long time ago. So initially for me, I started around 2013 with crypto. Before that, I was doing a lot of, like, I don't know, servers, websites for people, that kind of thing. And then building video games as a kid. So that's sort of my trajectory into it. Initially found Bitcoin and all this stuff in 2013. Then started to kind of evolve into doing more mining pools, like that kind of thing. I found Ethereum because I tried to work with Bitcoin initially. It was like way back when things were really bad code-wise on that client. And the Bitcoin maxis kind of kicked me out because I tried to expand the op return from 40 bytes to 1 megabyte. And people really didn't like that. I think it was like right after the block size wars and these other things. And so some guy on the Bitcoin forum recommended I check out Ethereum. My whole life shifted after that. So I watched a bunch of very grainy videos of Vitalik in a dark room trying to explain, you know, what Ethereum is. And I have to say, at the very beginning, like, you could have had the smartest person in the world explain this thing and it wouldn't have made any sense. Like, it was at the start, it was very confusing. So found it at a very early stage, started building with it. And I think that over time, you start to learn sort of what it's good at and what it's not good at. And, you know, joined Consensus, and I worked with them on applications and infrastructure for several years, and then left Consensus and wanted to really affect a different kind of change, I think, in the Ethereum space, because the current space had taken a trajectory always where they were always trying to patch the existing infrastructure. They were always trying to patch everything all the time. And they took this mentality like throughout the entire time I'd been working on Ethereum, and I'd been using Solidity and using all the tools almost since the beginning of Ethereum. And just the whole thing just felt very bad. Like the vibe and the energy around the project and the ethos and the values were very true to what I believed, you know, things should be in the space. But the tooling and the way that things worked, the way that everything was actually kind of unfolding was not so great. And it had never really been very good. And so as I looked at scaling systems for Ethereum and I looked at like what available options there were, you know, eventually I found optimistic rollups, found kind of the whole, you know, rollup idea itself and wanted to pursue that because that allowed us to use Ethereum as sort of a security layer and then create whatever you want on top. So you can create whatever kind of execution model you want on top and whatever kinds of tools, whatever kinds of languages, and really kind of break free from this, you know, heavily constrained design environment that we had had with Ethereum forever, where like you had to wait for the EF gods to like bring an opcode down before you could like get excited about anything. And it was just, the speed of innovation was far too slow. So rollups created a way for us to have a much higher speed of innovation. So with Fuel, you know, we deployed the first optimistic rollup to Ethereum and we got that to mainnet in like December 2020. It's still the only one as of today that's like actual level two status security. So it's fully inherited, you know, the security of Ethereum in all theoretical sense. And basically after we deployed that, we didn't market it very much and we just decided to go heads down into building a virtual machine, you know, capable version, one that can do all kinds of things, not just transfers and swaps, because that was Fuel V1. So we built out, you know, over the past few years, we've been building out, you know, what would be sort of the Fuel V2 system and what we now call, you know, kind of our rollup OS. And the idea is just to say that, you know, I think that Ethereum now is becoming a sort of hardware layer to blockchain itself. And, you know, these rollups and these different environments we're putting on top are kind of like software. And so
interesting.
Really, you know, when we're talking about building an operating system for rollups, we're talking about that, you know, okay, let's not joke around anymore. Now rollups are going to be the way that this thing will work. And effectively an operating system for rollups is sort of exactly what we need for the moment, and something that I think a lot of projects will want. And of course, when you're designing something like that, you get to look back on everything. You look back on Solana, all their design pros and cons. You look back on Move. You look back on Cosmos. You look back on the EVM, Wasm, Risk. You look at all these architectures and you go, okay, well, we can pick all the best things from all these different architectures and, you know, basically create our own universe with, you know, all the best stuff that was put out there, and create something that is, you know, extremely performant, but is also sustainable, that is also designed to interoperate with each other so that, you know, at the end of the day, when everyone builds their own rollups and they build their own stuff, you know, these rollups are not just, you know, deploy once for everybody, but that everyone can kind of have their own rollup with their own ideas and their own operations and their own things, and they can all intercommunicate together. So that's the world we want to see. And, you know, we're very much, you know, ETH, I wouldn't say ETH maxis, but at least I and some very key people in Fuel are very, you know, Ethereum aligned. But that's more about the values. And I think like we like Ethereum a lot and we like the values that the community holds. And, you know, we've sort of been quiet builders in the background for a very long time with Ethereum. So for us, this is a big opportunity to try something different with Ethereum.
Yeah, it's your guys' home base. And yep. I think you said something really interesting that I want to unpack for a lot of the Crypto 101 listeners. You know, you had a technical introduction and some people might be like, wait, what the heck is even a rollup? Like we might even be at that level. You know, for some folks who that just might be new terminology. And so you said rollups are going to be the way this whole thing is done. And maybe a paraphrase there, but what does that mean? Like, you know, why is somebody who's listening, why should they care about rollups? What are they? And what does that really mean that this is going to be how we, you know, scale the future?
Yeah. So I think the way to think about rollups is like this. You know, I think when the internet started, you know, if you had asked someone in the 1990s, like, hey, how does your like server work right now? And like, how is it going to work in the future? Right. Like they probably just be like, well, everyone, you know, just join, you know, can view my website. I connected it to the internet and, you know, the entire world can just look at my website off my one server, you know, and that'll be fine. Like there's not that many people on the internet right now, you know? And so effectively when the internet started, everything was super basic. There wasn't specialized hardware to do different things. There wasn't all kinds of different separations of concerns when it comes to the technology. And someone in the 90s or, you know, early, you know, late 80s or something would have like laughed at you basically if you had said that there would be specialized servers for like just particular kinds of networking and just particular kinds of storage and just particular kinds of, you know, CPUs or GPUs. And there'd be all these farms everywhere interconnected in this different way. Like basically the internet isn't just single servers everywhere. It's like a conglomeration of a lot of separations of concerns. And this is the way the internet scaled, right? And so with blockchain, there's a similar thing happening where unfortunately you can't just build a blockchain anymore and have it serve everybody on planet Earth for the rest of time. Because unfortunately, you're not going to have all the creative potential to really design the kinds of realities that you want on that. And you're not going to have a single party that's going to come up with every single way that that blockchain is going to be used. And so blockchains are going through this phase of where they're saying, well, instead of the base blockchain, the layer one being this chain that does everything for everybody, instead it will just do one or two things. It'll do those really well. And then other people can come and build other things on top of it that will service different use cases and be used for different things. And so it's effectively the separation of concerns and the maturing of blockchain technology in general has begun, basically, where layers like Ethereum now are just saying, well, we're not going to do absolutely everything for everybody forever. That would be too expensive. We haven't really figured that out. But we will be a data layer, the secure witnessing layer for the entire world. And then they can build their blockchains on top of that. And we can have this really expressive form of infrastructure that can go and service everything. So if you're a gaming project, you're going to have different realities to, if you're a finance project, to different realities to, if you're a NGO. So everyone's going to have different ways to come at problems. And all rollups are is basically a way to say that, you know, you can bring different kinds of blockchains into the world of Ethereum and into the world of these other layer one blockchains. And you don't need to be constrained anymore by, like, you know, the Ethereum Foundation's decisions on everything. Like, you can design whatever kinds of blockchains you want, and you can, if you design them well, they can inherit the full security of Ethereum. If you design them in a way that maybe you only need some security, maybe you just need interoperation, maybe you just need settlement, you can pick now the kinds of properties you're looking for. And rollups and blockchains are, in a way, they're just a way to make blockchains like you would run a server, basically. So just trying to make these things really simple so that it's like a few buttons and like you've got your own blockchain and it's defended and it can do thousands of TPS. It can do whatever you want it to do. And users can come to that and use all the different systems inside of it. And, you know, it's very much like how we spin up cloud services today. So it's the same kind of thing. So that's the way I kind of describe it, is like, you know, in a long-winded way, it's just to say the internet went through something similar. Blockchains are going through that now. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, what do you think of some of these like newer layer ones slash Ethereum competitors? Because I know that that's been on the front of everyone's mind. And it feels like every cycle, right? We hear the term Ethereum killer. It continues to come around. But, you know, at the current time of making this video, Solana's making a run for it. And there's other, you know, quote unquote, Ethereum competitors out there as well. But, you know, Solana just passed the fourth largest cryptocurrency by market cap, third largest if you don't count Tether, which would make it the, you know, the next mainstream altcoin right underneath Ethereum. You know, what do you think of some of those competing layer ones? Do we live in a space where there can be these like multiple competitors coexisting? Do you think that they endanger Ethereum, or do you think that Ethereum has done enough so far with like the amount of developers and infrastructure that they've built to kind of like retain that title?
Yeah, so I think there's a few things going on. So there's what happens with games we play with each other to try to differentiate different chains and all sorts of things. So, you know, human beings want to create all kinds of weird ideas around what's good and what's bad, and then try to really force that into the conversation always and be like, well, this thing over here does these things and this thing over here doesn't. And that therefore, like, this is better, this is worse, we don't need this anymore. And I think in many ways, the market forces us to be extremely competitive like that, and to really like want to put, you know, blockchains like Solana in direct competition with things like Ethereum. And like, I think, you know, the Solana community has been like really heavy on like pointing direct competition. And then the Ethereum community, being in and of itself like really messy, has now like, you know, effectively tried to resist that. And I think there's all kinds of weird competitive things going on that don't make any sense, quite frankly, because in the end, I think, first of all, the actual throughput and TPS of these blockchains and all this sort of stuff is at this stage, quite frankly, just theory. So it's not real. There's not enough justification yet. There's not enough people here yet to really justify a lot of this throughput that's available. There's a lot of block space out there that's secure enough. There's a lot of throughput out there that's secure enough. There's a lot of ways now that we can achieve high throughput. All of that is completely commodified, in my opinion, is not special in any way. Like, if your blockchain can do, you know, 500 TPS, that probably services most of the users you'll ever encounter in real life. And it's the same for Solana. So the fact that it could do 40, 50,000, it's like not special. You know, Fuel does anywhere between 7 to 12,000 TPS per core. So, and we're not like going on Twitter and, you know, screaming about that. Similarly, Fuel, if you add a GPU, can do like 500 to 700,000 TPS before. Oh, is that like a big, you know, killer of Fire Dancer? It's like, yes, that's technically a killer of Fire Dancer, but we don't care about that because it's completely unrealistic. So I think the thing you have to look at is like, there's sort of the conversation that goes on about TPS and about the way the market's picking things up, etc. But there's a much deeper conversation here that goes back to the sort of ethos and values of crypto itself that's much more important. So, you know, in a sense, while we're over here fighting about scaling, Bitcoin has not scaled. Bitcoin has no scaling potential right now at all, and holds a giant chunk of the entire space, both the mindshare and what the space is about, right? And the thing is you might ask yourself, like, well, Solana is doing all of this work, and yet Bitcoin's still incredibly valuable in the space, right? What's going on there? And the main thing is that the space is really derived from different values and principles, which make it valuable in the first place. Different social, you know, ways that people, you know, are with each other, different social contracts, you could say. And Bitcoin and Ethereum have a very strong social contract as to what we're looking for. And the value is actually derived a lot from that and not specifically the technology itself. Solana doesn't, I would argue, have a strong social contract. Its social contract is go really fast at all costs. And I'm like, well, you know, quite frankly, that's interesting. The market probably wants some of that. But as the market educates itself more into what the space is really about, they'll realize that it's far less about just like do whatever you want technologically. And it's far more about what is your ethos and values from the beginning? And like, you know, how does that set up your whole chain and what you want from blockchain? And that's where I think Ethereum and Bitcoin have that in spades, and like Solana definitely doesn't. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. And I know your whole journey actually started because you felt like, you know, you were developing on Bitcoin and it was too ossified, or, you know, it was stuck in its ways and didn't make any upgrades or whatever. You know, we've had a few upgrades along the way with Taproot, which enabled ordinals and SegWit, right? Which little things here and there, but by and large, yeah, the Bitcoin side of the camp really thinks, you know, move slow and have, you know, developments, you know, very, you know, sparingly and only, you know, minimally. And you have other places like maybe Solana or the rollups, or, you know, move fast and break things. And certainly there's going to be, I think, a place for both of those. I think if you think about, you know, what do you want for your money, your savings, your whatever, maybe Bitcoin's a better form for that because it is more projectable of what it's going to be 100 years in the future. Whereas Ethereum or Solana or any of these other ones, you know, they're much more apt to be, you know, more of a internet, right? More of an application layer, or a layer for applications to be built on. How do you kind of think about, like, you know, Ethereum as money, or is Ethereum actually just going to be this, you know, more commodity like this oil?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that all cryptocurrency holds a much better stance as commodity than it does money in and of itself. I think money is something close to the US dollar, which both Bitcoin and Ether, you know, and Sol and all these other things are not. So I think that, you know, inherently money is a very different kind of thing. I think that being said, though, I'd much rather hold commodity than I would money, especially nowadays. And so for me, 100%. Commodity is what real value storage would be in any way. And I think that Bitcoin and Ethereum have that, you know, they have that in spades too. And I think that as far as, you know, the perception of these different things, I think that Ethereum holds still a lot of the values that Bitcoin brought to the table, which is why for me it is so valuable. And if Vitalik tomorrow said, like, hey, we're going to change the node requirements, they're going to now be like not Raspberry Pi node requirements or something, then to me, Ethereum would lose its values and the social contract would be broken. And then that's where the market would probably assess that and figure out what that would mean, right? Mm-hmm. But I think that a lot of the social contract that we see is, like, you know, around some of these core values of, you know, censorship resistance, around accessibility to the nodes themselves and being able to self-verify things. And then for Ethereum's case, it's now being a supportive player in basically being a global arbiter, viewer of state transitions for all different kinds of blockchains. And I think that that's a very new, exciting position to hold. And it's very easy for Ethereum to get to a scale with the current setup that it has, that I really do think it could act as a core settlement layer for most of the world. You know, once you add in compression, a few other things, I think that for a good chunk of planet Earth, for a good chunk of the population, Ethereum would actually be an effective settlement layer itself. You know, and I think that all these other layer ones and these other projects are very interesting, but I think Ethereum doesn't need to compete with them, like, on their terms and in their way. I think it can do its own thing. And the value for me is really derived from these social principles and these values, because that's why we did Bitcoin in the first place, because the banking system broke its social contract with the public. And now we want another mechanism, right? We want something else. And both Ethereum and Bitcoin are filling that void really well, I would say.
Yeah. I mean, I love that idea, or really just like the concept that different layer ones can be used to do different things, especially the concept that, like, things like Ethereum and Bitcoin are more so a commodity than like a currency. You know, when we think of a currency, we think of like a fiat, like a US dollar or something like that. And that has to be one of the biggest misconceptions that newcomers to the space think. As they come in, they go, well, I can't go spend my Ethereum at the grocery store. And it's like, well, it's not really meant to be, you know, gone and spent at a grocery store or a gas station or something like that. And so while people are using them for like larger scale transactions, you know, real estate, sometimes I've seen people do planes and cars and other stuff like that, I think that's okay. But when we're talking about like day-to-day transactions for going out and purchasing clothes and groceries and gas and all this other stuff, Ethereum's original intent was never to be used like that. And so helping people understand that, you know, this is essentially building like the next version of the internet, you know, that's Ethereum's core purpose here. And so as any industry grows and expands, there's constantly new capabilities that are going to be brought in. Like, you look at the cell phone, for example, like all the new like apps and different things that cell phones have now versus like even just 20 years ago. And so that's one of the cool things that you all are doing over at Fuel Labs, is you want to bring new capabilities to Ethereum. And we were looking through this stuff. It's things like unpacking state minimization, UTOX models, asset orientation, VM customization. And I know the listeners are going, Brendan, what language are you speaking? Like, what does all that mean? And so I think it'd be best to hear it straight from your mouth. And just like, what are these new capabilities that you want to bring to Ethereum? And like, how would it just impact or potentially change the ecosystem?
Yeah. So, and also I'll just say, 'cause I know there'll probably be a few people listening who are like, screaming. UTXO, not UOTX or however.
Oh, my bad.
you're close though. Honestly, it's UTXOs are one of those things that like we inherit from Bitcoin, and those are actually particularly bad brand. Like their branding is horrible as a term itself. It has not gone well as far as a mechanism, but it's a really incredible technology regardless. So yeah, maybe to explain what we've done with Fuel and like kind of our design philosophy is even more important than exactly what we've done. But effectively, the idea is that we kind of been developing blockchains enough now where we can look back on all the things that worked and all the things that didn't. And we can look at specific design mechanisms and things that have been built in the space. And we can go, these things are actually really cool. We should use these. And these things probably not so good or really hard to work with under certain constraints. And when you're designing blockchains and you're designing, you know, say the ultimate blockchain, you would want the blockchain to be very performant, meaning it can handle high load. You've heard ad nauseum about high load from Solana. Mm-hmm. But what you might not have heard is things like, as well, having a system that is sustainable, right? So if you have all this throughput, it means that you need to keep track of a lot more stuff. And like keeping track of it means more hard drives. It means more RAM. It means more resources. So being able to design a blockchain that's also sustainable on those requirements is also really, really key. Something that flushes away all the stuff you don't need so that basically when this thing's running and you're running, you're doing lots of TPS, that the node requirements are sustainable, right? Because not just the validators have to run the clients, but you have to remember like every piece of infrastructure has to run the client too. And then they need to run copies of it because they need to run more and more propagation of all that different stuff. So basically having sustainability isn't just about like, that's just better on the single validators. It's like, no, it's for the entire infrastructure for every single chain. And because we believe every company, every project should run its own blockchain, maybe even multiple blockchains, you can imagine the kind of incurred state that would happen if they're running thousands of TPS each, right? So it's like a whole other thing to think about onto itself. So sustainability is another thing. And then the last thing is, designing for blockchains to look at each other and talk with each other. So a lot of the layer ones that you see in the space were never designed to really talk with each other. And so when we designed Fuel, we also thought, you know, very deeply about how would it be for another blockchain to look at this blockchain and could it understand everything that's going on? Could it figure out everything that's happening and easily be able to parse apart this chain and be able to find the information it's looking for, right? So we designed for some of these things and the result is that we made some particular decisions around what the technology is and how it works. And so to kind of, you know, name drop a little bit, we basically took the UTXO model that, you know, Bitcoin has, we took the smart contract system that Ethereum has, we took the parallelizability of, you know, current existing parallel blockchains. We also inherited things like spending conditions that we take from Bitcoin, but then we also took things like scripts and some of the safety features of Move and some of the Move chains, and as well like a new like a bunch of other features from a lot of other systems that I won't even begin to name. But we took all these different features, these different things that we saw in the space, and we built a blockchain out of all the best stuff that we could possibly find. And that creates an environment where you can not only have extremely high throughput, but other blockchains can leverage it. It can be sustainable. And as well, even for future proofing, like being run as a ZK rollup or these other kinds of different formats of the system are now much easier to accomplish. And effectively, you have a layer that should hopefully last for the next 10 to 15 years as far as what you're going to need as a blockchain itself. And our whole idea is just that basically everyone in the space will eventually get to what Fuel is. So you can just pick whether you want to use Fuel now or whether you want to use it later, but we guarantee you you'll come back around because basically, and unfortunately, a lot of these changes didn't think of all the stuff that you would want to think about. And we were in a very unique position to be able to look back on everything and do what we wanted. And we, you know, have a good level of support to be able to do that. So for us, like, that's kind of how the design came about, but it leverages all kinds of different features from different blockchains. So it's very unique in that sense. Yeah.
I love it. All roads lead back to Fuel, apparently, is the way I'm thinking about it.
Like, Solana will eventually get to something that is like UTXOs. Just give it some time, and they'll eventually figure out that maybe UTXOs are the right model. So, you know, things like that all the time will happen continuously. Yeah.
Hopefully we're going to have some kind of victory lap here in 3 or 5 years or whatever. Everything just converges to exactly what you said. And I'm curious, actually, like, you know, as you guys are developing Fuel Network, Fuel Labs is developing Fuel Network. Tell us about, like, the plan. Are you guys going after users first, developers first? You know, what's kind of the game plan here? And also, is the Fuel Network token a thing? Is there a token? Does it need a token? How's that work?
Yeah, so in regard to kind of who we're targeting and what the first set of users are, I mean, it's definitely developers. I wouldn't suspect normal people walking around on the street to know who we are or what we do. I think that if we're successful, that we'll be powering a lot of different chains in the background, and you'll never know anything at all. You'll just know that, you know, this was actually everything you wanted out of blockchain itself has happened, and it just so happens to be a Fuel chain powering in the background. So I think that for us, it's all about developers. And for us, given the stage of where we're at with the project, like, there is some glass eating to do. So it's still very early. So mm-hmm. if you are a developer, you know, it's like you're getting into some real hot water if you're building on us right now. But it's very exciting hot water because it has all these different kinds of ideas incorporated inside of it. So initially, we definitely would like, you know, application developers to build with us, and, you know, Fuel will launch as a layer two. As far as token stuff, can't say anything in regard to token stuff. But I will say that in regard to, you know, the future, I would say that, you know, I think that there are a lot of things in the space that are coming up that are uniquely advantageous for layer two projects to build and work with. So shared sequencing is one area. Yeah, but the whole point is just to say that, you know, we want people to eventually, after we deploy our layer two, we'd want people to actually build layer threes. And I think that that's going to be where the future is pushed for Fuel. So we'd like projects to be able to evolve out of an application into a layer three, into their own blockchain, pick their own DA layer, pick their own properties that they're looking for, but be able to gain all the benefits of a very advanced settlement layer in the layer two space and allow users to come in and out of the layer. So basically come from the layer two, go into the layer three, do a bunch of crazy, insane things. And then once you're done with crazy, insane things, come back to the layer two to safety. And that allows for, I would say, a much more expressive, you know, form of creativity from application developers. And then on top of that, you know, have a data layer that is shared between these layer threes and layer twos. So that basically communicating and interoperating will be almost at a single block between different blockchains. So it's very, in that sense, I think, exciting, because I think each layer two project has their own plan for interoperating within itself, like in their own layers. And I think that that's easy. The key will be how Fuel plays with other optimistic rollups and other ZK rollups. That's something the community is still figuring out. But I think there's a lot of really interesting work being done there. So effectively, we will break all the fragmentation fairly soon, I think. But in and of itself, fragmentation should not be a problem with Fuel and Fuel's broader network of different rollups, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, interoperability is becoming an increasingly bigger part of the conversation. And it makes sense, right? There's no reason that everything should be decompartmentalized, right? No, I mean, a big reason that we are all so convinced of a blockchain tech is because it decentralizes everything. And if everything was decompartmentalized per chain, it just...
If things were compartmentalized. We're trying to decompartmentalize things.
Yes. Correct. But, you know, this wouldn't be a proper Ethereum-focused podcast if we didn't get to at least talk about the recent Denkun upgrade or the ETFs that are, you know, allegedly supposed to come out in a few months. And I know that there's been a little bit of controversy around both of these, right? With gas fees for especially the layer twos going down and then coming back up. And now they're supposed to go down again. And then the ETFs had this like 60, 70% approval rating. Now we're hearing that that could be like a 30% by May. And there's a lot of people that believe that it's imminent. Other people believe that it's going to happen later this year. And I'd love to just get your thoughts on both of these.
Yeah. So I would say in regard to the upgrade. So yeah, for me, I've waited so long for Ethereum to start scaling that it was like, you know, I think the moment at least when that upgrade hit, it was like finally, you know, it's finally moving in the right direction in terms of how Ethereum should scale and how it should become, you know, as a kind of blockchain system itself for the world. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the upgrade for us was super important. Basically, it's transitioning Ethereum from sort of a blockchain that has a computer inside of it that's very slow and doesn't really do anything very well to, you know, now actually moving towards saying, hey, we're actually going to help power a sort of roll-up universe where we can help roll-ups as a sort of core settlement system for all their data and allow us to basically bring safety to a lot of different blockchains. And then allow people to build different blockchains and express different, you know, kinds of properties that they want. And basically, I think the way to put it this way is like, you know, Solana will only have the Solana Foundation, and that'll be, you know, basically a few people architecting the system, and that's what they're restrained to. We'll have thousands and thousands of different really smart people building really crazy, highly performant chains. We'll be able to build thousands and thousands of Solanas, basically, if you can think about it that way. Wow. And in that sense, it's a very different kind of world that you look at, because Ethereum will now play a role to work to settle all of these different chains and interoperate them, but also be a sort of core you know, data availability layer for them. And I think that it's playing a different kind of position, really, because it's enabling a lot more creativity at the infrastructure level. Mm-hmm. And that's what's so exciting about it. So the 4844 upgrade is the start of this process. But basically, you know, in theory, the difference between having 0.75 megabytes of data and 16 megabytes, which would be like more than enough for the kind of data we're thinking about, is really a configuration change in Ethereum now. So we're so close now to being able to basically turn up the heat, add more data, add more capacity, and be able to still hold our Raspberry Pi values, but provide significant amounts of new capacity for rollups and users. And yeah, in regard to the fees, like I tweeted about this a few times already, but basically the main way to think about this is that 4844 was actually a capacity increase, not a fee decrease. The fee decrease is a nice bonus. If you can get fees to decrease, that's wonderful. But what we're actually doing is expanding the potential capacity of Ethereum. And now it's up to the rollups to basically figure out different strategies as to how to pack more users into the same amount of data and settle more state transitions with the same amount of data. And so so it's really a capacity increase, not a fee decrease, which is why you might see the fees initially decrease, because the market is sort of not tuned yet to the kind of throughput capacity and data we have. And then it will go back up, but it'll probably be somewhat cheaper than what it was before. And it'll be cheaper for more people, which is actually the key. So it's cheaper for a lot more people. It's instead of being, you know, 8 cents for a million people, it'll be 1 cent for 10 million people, something like that, you know, and in that way, it's like, that's a completely different shift in terms of potential. But again, from us to expand from, say, 0.75 megabytes up to 16 is in theory just a configuration change. Obviously, they wouldn't do that because there's different constraints on the client that they have to design for. But that being said, that's sort of the idea, right? And it's very easy for a CPU to write and handle data blobs to a drive temporarily and then get rid of them. That's a pretty easy operation for a CPU to do. So it's really excellent retaining, again, the sort of Raspberry Pi cypherpunk values that Ethereum has, you know?
Yeah. I love it. Yeah, the Raspberry Pi, if anybody at home is listening, is like, what does he keep talking about this? This is like really, really small computers that anybody could run for maybe $100 or whatever. To make to keep the network decentralized, you want to have a really low cost of hardware needed to run this. Whereas I think in Solana's validator set, you have to spend, you know, tens of thousands of dollars in order to run these validating nodes. So I think one of Ethereum's core principles for scalability and decentralization is keeping it so that, you know, you could be in a developing country with not much excess income and still be able to afford a validating node on the global internet, basically
Ethereum. It's really trying to say that, you know, blockchains are, you don't just want to open up all server space to blockchains because it doesn't really fit necessarily the principles of blockchain itself. If you need a server, you should use a server, and the server has its own criteria around security. But if you need a large network of like highly Byzantine fault tolerant network that works in a particular way with a certain social ethos and is trying to, again, act as sort of a counterparty to existing world governments, that should probably be a lot lower node requirements and should be something that is far more reasonable to run. And so I think the big differentiator between Ethereum and Solana is that Ethereum is specifically way worse in terms of node requirements, or it has way less node requirements. And that's what gives it a ton of value. And The second you start changing that, I think that, yes, you could hold onto the values, but you're probably going to lose a bit of the ethos of what Ethereum really was. So for me, I think Ethereum's biggest value add to the whole table of blockchain right now is that it is so simple. There are so many people that care about it, so many people that need and require it. And as well, because it has these low node requirements, it can really fulfill its ethos and its duty to planet Earth. And in that sense, that's what it should be and that's what it should do. But that doesn't mean, at least in our sense, that you can't have very crazy high throughput blockchains running on it, which is exactly what Fuel brings to the table. Yeah,
I love it. Well, last question we have for you before we get the social handles and where to find you guys. I'm curious about what the next big Ethereum upgrade that's coming down the pike. What is it? What are you guys like really excited for about next? Because now that this Denkun has happened, what's the next one?
Yeah, I mean, I think for us, the most exciting one would just be more DA, basically just more data itself. So, you know, right now with the current DA layer as it is, and, you know, if we were to use all the DA as fast as possible, which again, wouldn't necessarily happen, but let's say we did, Fuel can produce, if we're at full optimization, can produce around 5,000 TPS. If we do one more expansion of that, you could double or triple that. And I think that basically as a core settlement system, if you find nice compression patterns, it can be really, really effective to do a lot of this settlement that I was talking about. And so basically, I think that an expansion of capacity there would be the most exciting thing for us. But again, the client developers and like all the different clients and everything else have to basically load test that. They have to figure that out. They have to make sure that everything's going to run properly before we do that. But I think that that's sort of, for us, that would be the most exciting thing. There's a bunch of other little ones like adding BLS opcodes and a few other things that I think would be really beneficial for Ethereum to do. But for now, I would say the one that I'm most excited about is just adding more DA and adding more throughput, which again, might be as simple as just changing a configuration setting at this stage, which is really exciting.
Love it. Well, how can people stay in touch? Are you guys big on Twitter, Discord, Telegram, forums? And what is the website that we could link in the show notes?
Yeah. So the website is fuel.network. The forum would be the best place to ask, you know, more interesting questions than just like, you know, any number of dumb things I see on Discord. So basically I would say the forum is better if you want to ask more technical questions or understand our language or a virtual machine or the way we built everything or, you know, want to build something with us. So forum.fuel.network is the forum. And then on Twitter, I believe it's just fuel_network. I'll just confirm that. So I don't send you to some scam page. Yeah, it's fuel_network for Twitter. I would say that's probably the best way to stay in touch right now is probably just the forum, Twitter. You know, we do have a Discord, but currently I'm not so happy with Discord. I think this thing just, I don't know. Discord to me is insane. So yeah. Ask us questions on the forum.
Yeah, you're not the first person to share that sentiment as well. It's some of these big chat groups are just getting a little too out of hand.
Yeah, so. I just think the noise to signal ratio is horrible. So you might as well just ask on a real forum and like ask a nice concerted question.
I love it. Yeah. No, this has been awesome. Nick, thank you so much for coming on to the Crypto 101 podcast, sharing all the good news out of your corner of the world. Hopefully we can get you back on again, talk about some more updates, maybe when there's another big Ethereum upgrade. We've really enjoyed this conversation, and everybody at home listening, hopefully you did as well. Check out Fuel Labs, check out Fuel Network, and follow along for the journey.
Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app. Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit two, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.